I mean, my idea of what life was all about in the olden days was to be happy.
Come over to the window, my little
darling. I want like to try to read your palm. And then happiness somehow always was, in the olden days, connected with a person, falling in love, falling out of love, being, what do you call it, when somebody doesn't need you anymore. So, Marianne,
it's time we began to laugh
and cry and lie.
Well, I have a little drawing here. It says, only one thing made him happy. And now that it was gone, everything made him happy. I feel tremendously relieved that I'm not worried about my happiness. There are things, of course, that make me happy when I see my children well, when I see my daughter's dogs, a glass of wine. But what I'm so happy about is that the background of discomfort, of distress, has evaporated. Before, it was all one piece. It was very dark, a sense of things being deeply not right. And, you know, by the grace of God, that feeling has evaporated.
Well, you know, I've come to that second half of my life. First of all, you keep on looking back, you can't avoid it, and you are part of your first half of your life. And things get easier. Things are not that serious. You realize you have less time, and you everything gets more calm.
I know that the past produces the present, and the present produces the future. But I have no interest in the past, and I have very little interest in the man I was then. It doesn't present a mystery to me. It doesn't present a puzzle to be solved. I just feel I embody it, you know.
When I think of certain choices that has been taken, totally unconscious, if you know what I mean. Poof, it just happened.
Just fooling around, just remembering. Just remembering.
I hope that I can laugh more than cry.
I forget what these songs are. I've really got to learn them again.
And I don't think you grow old on the inside, somehow. Anyway, so long. You know how Leonard says my name? Marianne. So long, Marianne. Come over to the window, my little darling. I'd like to try to read your palm. I used to think I was some sort of gypsy boy before I let you take me home. So long, Marianne. It's time that we began to laugh and cry and cry and laugh about it all again.
Well, you know that I love to live with you, but you make me forget so very much.
Somehow I was his muse in those days. Doesn't he somewhere say, thank you, Marianne, for making me so miserable that I had to write or create or something? I took that as a compliment. It is a compliment.
So long, Marianne.
I've been blessed with amnesia. I don't have any good memories or bad memories.
Cry and laugh about it all again.
We met when we were almost young, deep in the green lilac park. You held on to me like I was a crucifix as we went kneeling through the dark. Every line and every verse for me has its own story and comes out of a long process in a life.
I'm very happy when my life is uneventful and I don't have strong feelings about one thing or another. Didn't used to be like that. It was very much a sense of struggle and not defeat, actually, but weariness of the struggle. After a while, you just get tired of your own of your own drama.
Well, first of all, I had a great grandmother who deserves a whole story in its own, because she was... I lived with her from the age of... when did the war start? 40? From the age of 5, 6, I stayed with her in the country. I went to school in the country. My grandmother said that I will meet a man who speaks with the tongue of gold. Okay. I thought the tongue of gold was in Axel's mouth in the beginning. My first dear husband, who was quite crazy, somehow. But I realized that it was Leonard's tongue that my grandmother was talking about. Can you imagine having a grandmother who says, you're going to meet a man who speaks with a tongue of gold?
I had a great appetite for the company of women and for the sexual expression of friendship.
I am very old-fashioned. I was very old-fashioned then. I was so old-fashioned that I still believed in that you get married and you have a child and then you are two. And you take care of that child together. Like farmers think.
And I was very fortunate because it was the 60s. And that possibility was very, very present. And for a tiny moment in social history, there was a tremendous cooperation between men and women about that particular item. And so I was very lucky that my appetite coincided with this very rare, what, religious, social, I don't know what you'd call it, some kind of phenomenon, you know, that allowed men and women, boys and girls we were, to come together in that kind of union that satisfied both the appetites.
And then somehow, I've lived through ages where they say, just, you know, turn on, tune in and drop out, which was supposed to tell everything, or how to live. But it's not that easy. It's not that easy. Oh, you're really such a pretty one. I see you've gone and changed your name again. And just when I climbed this whole mountainside to wash my eyelids in the rain. So long, Marianne. It's time that we began to laugh and cry and laugh about it all again.
You know, I wasn't very good at the things a woman wanted. You know, I don't know if any men are.
He knew of me before I came. He had been on Idre for a while, I don't know, days, maybe a week. But when I came into a chaos and a shock with a newborn baby. But the day when he actually confronted me and spoke to me was when I was in the grocery store and he was standing in the doorway with the sun behind him so that he was just like a, what do you call it? He was all in black. I couldn't see his face. I couldn't see his eyes. A silhouette, and I heard his voice saying, would you like to join us, Marianne? We're sitting outside. And I was there shopping for my little baby, and I heard that voice, and I can hear it till this day. So I went outside with my big baskets, and I sat down, And when I met his eyes, it was like a fantastic lightning that went through my whole body. I think that was the beginning of something. And that was the first time we really met.
We met when we were almost young.
I think there's a lot of Marianne around, women who feel that that song is for me.
You held on to me like I was a crucifix.
It was written when I was around, so it wasn't to Anne or to Barbara or anybody else.
Oh, so long, Marianne, I am weeping to laugh
and cry.
So the next move, he sent me a telegram, and it says, "Have house. All I need is my woman and her son." Love, Leonard. And I emigrated to Montreal. But we found our way back to Idra very soon.
I've never forgotten this. Marianne and I were in a hotel in Piraeus. We got up and got a taxi. Nothing happened. We were just sitting in the back of the taxi with Marianne, lit a cigarette. That feeling, I think I've tried to recreate it hundreds of times unsuccessfully. Just that feeling of being growing up with somebody beautiful that you're happy to be beside. You know, where all the world is in front of you, where your body is suntanned. You're going to get on a boat.
I was talking about Leonard Cohen. Now I remember. Yeah. He taught me English. I started to dream in English. I started to think in English. And now I haven't spoken English in 30 years. I mean, so the time on Idra was the... he worked... I played the mother of the house and the mother of the child, and the sun was shining and we were barefoot. We had very little money, but it didn't matter because he had then bought his house from an inheritance from his grandfather. He had a big hole in the terrace floor and it had a big hole in the kitchen floor, but little by little he got it repaired. But in those days, you didn't make much money out of a book of poems. So finally, I sold the little house that Axel and I had bought, which I understand, when I hear Leonard talk, is the only thing that he's mad about me doing. Because a house on Idra that cost you £200 in those days is 20 millions today. I mean, you know, it's incredible what's happened. But anyway, I sold the house, moved the furniture over to Leonard's house, and we settled there.
I wanted to be a writer. From very, very early time, I just knew I was going to be a writer. And it was a writer not in a popular culture. On the contrary, it was a writer whose allegiance was to writers that were already dead. And my feeling was if I did those things with the kind of integrity and the gift would be given me, that I wouldn't have to worry about my life. There would be money, there would be women. Not in any abundance. I mean, there'd be enough for me.
I was blonde, sunburned. My hair was completely white from the sun. Leonard said the most beautiful woman he has ever met. I didn't feel that. I had one skirt, two t-shirts, one pair of sandals, and two pair of sailor pants. And when I look at the pictures of me now, I think, gosh, yeah, yeah. Not bad, not bad. But when you don't feel it inside and you don't look at yourself as, you are very all right, Marianne. My God, you're all right. I was looking at myself and saying, oh, everything is wrong with me, you know. So it's a pity. Maybe when I looked at myself in those days, it was the small, it was all the little trolls and the dark things I saw. At least I felt it. I was troubled. It was quite difficult sometimes, not with Leonard or with our relationship in that way, but everybody was creative. There were writers, there were painters. Everybody that came to the island were all famous in some way. Princess Margaret was there. Jacqueline Kennedy was there. So what were I doing in the middle of all this? I think at one stage I used to say, I'm living, trying to live or something. Not very original.
She was one of the most modest people about her beauty. You know, looking at it from a distance of, 40, 45 years almost, I see how very rare those qualities are. And she had that other side too, where she'd drink wine and dance and become wild and beautiful and threatening and dangerous, you know.
I felt free in a way, but to walk barefoot and to somehow run so fast in that one and only street that is slightly going like this, because it was, when the rain came, it was the river, and it's called the Road to the Wells, and I lived on that road. And when you start from the top there, where my house was in the beginning, and run slightly down, it goes faster and faster and faster, and finally, close to the end of that road, you had a sense of flying. And I will never forget that. But that was a real physical sensation. Of course I had 3 or 4 glasses of Retsina.
I loved you in the morning.
I loved you in the morning. Our kisses deep and warm. Your hair upon the pillow like a sleepy golden storm.
Many love before.
That's a beautiful song too. He's quite a poet.
And in forests they smiled like me and you, but now it's come to distances, and both of us must try. Your eyes are soft with sorrow.
Hey, that's no way to say goodbye.
Well, I must have been in my late 20s, or must have been around 30. I had just come to the realization that I, you know, couldn't make a living. I had expected that money would come just ordinarily, not great amounts of it, but I thought if I wrote well and books were published, and they were, that there would be enough to finance the next book. I had, you know, always played songs. I'd always been interested in music and played music, never professionally. So I was beginning a musical career for which I thought I was totally unsuited. I didn't play guitar well. I didn't sing well. I thought my lyrics were okay, my tunes were good. I thought I had a voice, but I thought it was written. I thought it was a written voice. So I never thought of presenting that voice on a stage. I was testing out the possibility of being a singer.
I wasn't easy to live with. Leonard was extremely patient. When I wanted to dance, he would sit outside and wait till I danced.
I remember her arriving at the airport in her fur coat. She had 2 heavy valises in each hand. I was prevented from entering that area, but I could see her through the glass. And she couldn't wave to me because she couldn't lift the suitcases up, and she didn't want to drop them. She was moving, you know. So she waved to me with her foot. I remember that very, very clearly.
Like a bird on the wire.
Like a bird on the wire, like a drunk in a midnight choir. I have tried in my way to be free.
In my way to be free.
I felt much more that bird on the wire had something to do with me because I was there.
On a hook, like a night from some old-fashioned book.
I gave him the guitar. We looked out of the window, we saw the birds landing on the wires, and he had not been able to create or write or sing or do anything for weeks, and he was in a very, very deep, deep depression.
If I have been unkind.
If I have been unkind, I hope that you can just let it go by.
I hope that you can just let it go by.
And if I have been untrue, I hope you know it was never to you.
If I have been untrue, I hope you know it was never to you.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite songs, absolutely.
More like a baby stillborn.
When you see it in the light of how it began, it was when the new electricity came to Israel. And it also was a period in my life where I had to make a decision that was pretty hard. And that was following my intuition and decide that Leonard and I was not going to have any children together. Yeah.
I saw a beggar leaning on his wooden crutch. He said to me, "You must not ask for so much."
Where was I? The parting. When we were living in Montreal, I would come down to New York and experience the Chelsea Hotel and meet Buffy St. Marie, you know, Andy Warhol, and that. And get a feeling of that life. But he was mostly there alone. And I think he needed it to create somehow. So, you know, the distance was longer and longer also. But the parting was, somehow it's very funny, we talked about my house. And then one day, of course I knew about it, there was letters and telephone calls. One day Suzanne, with little Adam, the same age as my son when I came back to Israel, standing on the doorway, wondering when I was moving out so she could move in. I remember that seeing her, I somehow felt a little bit taller, a little bit stronger, a little bit older, and a little bit wiser. It's a funny feeling, but I was like, there was something that I got hold of something when I saw her there with the baby. And then I remember the way I very calmly, not thinking about too many things, packed up, took Axel, and moved out.
Suzanne takes you down to her place near the river.
It was too good to last.
You hear the boats go by, you can spend the night beside her.
But anyway, 7 years, the perfect relationship. So, we had that.
Why you wanna
and she feeds you. Greece is a good place to look at the moon, isn't it? You can read by moonlight. You can read on the terrace. You can see a face as you saw it when you were young. There was good light then, oil lamps and candles, and those little flames that floated on a cork in olive oil.
I have somehow always looked at him as more than a poet, more than a singer, more than just an ordinary man. There has been something around him that is rare.
For you've touched her perfect body with your mind.
The first time I met Dalai Lama, I felt the same.
And Jesus was a sailor when he walked upon the water.
So that's the way I felt.
He spent a long time watching from his lonely wooden tower. And when
what I loved in my old life, I haven't forgotten. It lives in my spine. Marianna and the child, the days of kindness. It rises in my spine and it manifests as tears.
Long before the sky would open, forsaken.
I pray that a loving memory exists for them too. The precious ones I overthrew for an education in the world.
And you want to travel with her, and you want to travel blind. You can trust her, for she's touched your perfect body with her mind.
He gave me three lines before I left Idra. It's with me, constantly. And it goes like this. Things happen, deeds are done, there is no individual doer thereof. Yeah. So, the past is sitting here, right here and now.